For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Guilty, and sentenced to be hanged by the neck until dead. The trial lasted only 3 days, a jury deliberation of just an hour. The case was closed, and the men responsible for the cold-blooded murder of five innocents, including a woman watching the robbery from a window, would pay with their lives for what they had done. Well, all save one. John Heath, tried separately for his part in the December 1883 Bisbee Massacre, would be found guilty of the lesser crime of second-degree murder. For his part in arranging the holdup but not pulling the trigger, he was sentenced only to life at the Yuma Territorial Prison. Less than satisfied, in true Wild West fashion, a large, angry mob of Bisbee locals descended upon Tombstone and the grounds of its courthouse, where John was being held for his own safety. With the sheriff and guards at gunpoint, Heath was ushered out the door, down the block, and hung quickly from a telegraph pole on the corner of 2nd and Tufnut. Citizen justice, brutally served. No arrests were ever made, and the incident was brushed over. A marker and a stump of the telegraph pole still stand to this day. The county coroner, Dr. George E. Goodfellow, who was in attendance, would later rule Heath's death to be the result of emphysema of the lungs, which might have been and probably was caused by strangulation, self-inflicted or otherwise. Nearly 1 month following, the remaining five convicted men were dressed in matching black suits, shaved, and marched to a gallows in the jail yard that had been specifically designed to accommodate all of them at once. March 28th, 1884, was a day to celebrate. Invitations were sent. 1,000 people would witness the execution. Hoods were placed, nooses were tightened, and at 1:18 p.m., the crowd quieted in anticipation before the platform dropped. And the first legal hangings in Tombstone were complete. It's said the men proclaimed their and John's innocence prior to their death. Modern-day accounts speak of some pretty strange activity at the Tombstone Courthouse and surrounding area. People have reported an orb of light in the upper level, phantom footsteps in the halls, a bell ringing where there is none to be rung. faces staring out from the windows. Last year, during my trip to Tombstone's Wild West Paracon, one of the evenings, I participated in one of the many ghost tours that the town offers. We were handed infrared beam lasers to measure temperature difference at a distance. One of our first stops was the courthouse, where we learned of the executions in the courthouse jail yard. A gallows with nooses stands there now, though this is only a replica. We also learned of John Heath, and were taken the very short distance to Second and Toughnut to stand on the very spot he was lynched so many years ago. Various paranormal investigators have been to the courthouse grounds. Some stories report hearing what sounds like swinging, weighted nooses just over the brick wall. Others have reported shadowy figures. For myself, I pointed my laser at many different spots near the courthouse to get a base reading. Then I pointed it at the wall nearest where the gallows would have been located. It came back exceptionally cold for some strange reason. And as for John Heath's death spot, while there have been less documented paranormal occurrences at this site, there is an undeniable stillness, something eerie and indescribable. It's far easier than you would think to visualize the event, the fear he must have felt, the anger of the mob, the heat already ebbing out the morning mist, and then the heavy silence in the aftermath. It is easy to look up and think you see something. It is uncomfortably tangible. And then you look down and you realize it's the same ground they dragged him across, the stump, the same they hung him from. And you look around, the courthouse, the jail yard, the streets, the surrounding buildings. Tombstone was notoriously violent. It doesn't surprise that people call it a hotspot for residual energy and otherwise. It was the town too tough to die. And perhaps it didn't. The energy, emotion, and violence that took place there. Does it all leave a mark? What about the energy, emotion, and violence of the executions of these men? Could echoes of these events linger in ways that are more than just imagination? The idea that words, actions, and energies leave an enduring impact on the world around us has deep and ancient roots, from early philosophers and religious texts to thinkers of the medieval and Renaissance periods to skeptics of the Romantic era. This idea has been tossed around in one way or another since our earliest days, and it has inspired a multitude of theories along the way. But one theory, in particular, stands tall amongst the rest. Many in the paranormal field point to it as an explanation behind residual hauntings. But is there anything to it? Can it really be the answer to a majority of the ghostly phenomena that people encounter? And if so, how? Welcome back to the Paranorm Girl podcast. Today we are discussing the Stone Tape Theory. Charles Babbage would be the first to address the permanence of words and actions on the physical in a scientific context when he published the Ninth Bridgewater Treatise in 1837. In this publication, he proposes ideas to support both the existence of God and science, and how deviations from a physical law may in fact indicate the intelligence and foresight of an omnipotent deity. The portion of his work that many point to as the first bubblings of what would become known as the Stone Tape Theory can be found in Chapter 9, entitled Permanent Impression of Words. Summed up, the words and sounds we utter are forever recorded by the atmosphere, and any physical action we could possibly take is forever recorded by the material world around us. In classic physics, technically, the energy of the sound wave never dies, even after the wave itself has dissipated beyond all detection. It propagates, it transforms. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed, only transformed. Keep that in mind. So, his hypothesis and ideas go thus. Vibrations of the human voice never disappear. Though they grow too faint to hear, these vibrations spread throughout the atmosphere, every particle carrying a tiny part of that original sound, indefinitely. Babbage proposed a being with the ability to perceive and measure these audio wave trajectories. This being could track it to any point in the future and in turn trace it back to its originating source. The movement and action leaves a lasting effect recorded in the movement of the particles around it. In a sense, the air is like an invisible library, storing every word ever spoken. This same idea comes into play with the material world. Like the air, Babbage proposes the earth and all bodies of water hold a record of our actions. Every disturbance leaves a trace in the movement of particles. These traces may spread out, getting weaker over time, but never disappear, even after the initial disturbance is long gone. Babbage's original Chapter 9 ponderings were but a small piece of his much larger argument that God and science could not just coexist peacefully, but were indelibly linked. The laws of science and disturbances to those laws, proof of God as an overarching programmer of all things. A common argument at the time was that any discontinuity in the geological record was proof of divine intervention. Babbage argued, nay, the discontinuity is proof of divine pre-programming, and in so saying stumbled face first into simulation theory without realizing it and far too early in history to appreciate the breakthrough he had just had. Now, while Babbage does not explicitly mention ghosts, what he discussed about how actions and events taking place leaving imprints on our physical world inspired interpretations that would link it to the paranormal. Meet this with the spiritualism movement's romance with life after death and the SPR's introduction of scientific inquiry into the strange and unusual in the mid to late 1800s, and you have yourself some pretty juicy makings for an interesting theory that would begin to take shape.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
The stone tape theory is an idea in paranormal research that suggests that certain materials, particularly certain types of stone, can record psychic or emotional energy, especially of the traumatic or intense types. These recordings of visuals, sounds, or emotions from the originating event can then potentially be played back or perceived at a later date. Stone tape theory is one of the leading explanations behind residual hauntings, or the energetic, non-intelligent replay of historical events trapped and replayed by the surrounding physical environment. Are the rocks to blame for holding these images or sounds captive? Let's take a closer look at how we got here and whether this theory has legs. Out of the spiritualism movement, two very important ideas were born: place memory and psychometry. Place memory originally wasn't called place memory. It was called nothing. It wasn't called anything, even though it had already been explored by early SPR figures like Eleanor Sidgwick and Edmund Gurney. It was just this growing concept that places become haunted. A ghost gets stuck, becomes rooted to a location for one reason or another. They were fond of the place, they died at the place, and the location now keeps them attached. A lot of our thoughts today about hauntings are very incorporative of this idea. Similar to place memory, where again, a ghost or energy becomes attached to a location, is the concept of psychometry, which has to do with when ghostly energy becomes attached to an object. And then the living, by placing hands on the object, can see, hear, and know things about the attached spirit, historical events the object has been through, places the object has been, etc., etc. The term psychometry was coined in 1842 by doctor and physiology professor Joseph Rhodes Buchanan, who would publish his Manual of Psychometry, The Dawn of a New Civilization, about 50 years later. Psychometry was his baby, his own little science, and try as he might to persuade minds of its reality in his Manual of Psychometry and his predictions of its revolutionary impact on the advancements of other branches of science and medicine, the skeptical really won out on this one at the time, and of course, to this day. The term itself means soul measuring. Knowledge is acquired directly via the psychometer, the instrument of the soul, the physical body. Now, in the early 1900s, this concept of energy attaching itself to things would continue to evolve and grow. In 1939, then president of the SPR, Oxford philosopher Henry H. Price, known for his work on perception, thoughts, and cognition in a philosophical sense, proposed that human memory could survive on its own in some form outside of the human mind, and could be accessed via someone sensitive enough to pick up on this memory. This could explain the true nature of hauntings. Such memories could be embedded in a space that was neither physical nor mental, and could relate to certain people, objects, and events that have somehow been retained by or become psychically associated with one certain location or geological region. He called this space the psychic ether and officially gave place memory its name. Decades later, archaeologist T.C. Lethbridge would further explore and elaborate on these ideas and the true nature of hauntings. Lethbridge attempted to approach the ghost problem from a scientific perspective. In his 1961 book, Ghost and Ghoul, he shares a bunch of strange experiences and stories, including two personal encounters with full-body apparitions that he'd had, and acting as his own guinea pig, endeavored to pull them entirely apart and arrive at some conclusion. Sounds a lot like my show. One would think, having not one, but two encounters with full-body apparitions would make a believer in the afterlife out of anyone. That is not what happened. His examination of his own undeniable experiences actually led him to double down on his scientific approach in order to find some logical way to explain what these were. From his book, "The question is not whether people see ghosts or not. There is ample evidence that they do so. The fact is there. It is the explanation of why and what and how that people want to know." Nothing wrong with this line of thinking. I think that is a perfectly scientific approach. His archaeologist colleagues would firmly disagree. Lethbridge did believe in ghosts. He did believe people were really experiencing something, himself included. But in attempting to put it through a more skeptical lens in his book, he hypothesized in regards to paranormal phenomena such as precognition, telepathy, poltergeists, full-body apparitions, that there was more than likely a natural force or law that could explain this very natural phenomena that we just had yet to understand. In his book, he stated that he felt pretty certain that the apparitions he witnessed were not spirits of the deceased, but rather pictures projected by a living person and received by another, likening the event to a television set receiving a signal. As far as how someone was able to receive this signal, he noted that it often seemed during many of these kinds of reported sightings, there was some kind of force being created, some kind of pressure built up in the surrounding natural physical environment, creating an electromagnetic-like field, or as he terms it multiple times, the resonance. He thought that water, in particular, could play a crucial role in storing and transmitting these signals, influencing when and how they would become perceptible to a receiver, so long as said receiver was properly attuned to pick them up. I have asked the question of multiple guests on this show whether there was a body of water near the location of a purported haunting. I have never put too much thought into it before this episode, where that theory came from. The more you know. 11 years after the publishing of Ghost and Ghoul, the BBC would broadcast the movie The Stone Tape. Lethbridge is often credited with having inspired this movie. The film follows a group of scientific researchers inside a Victorian mansion who realize they have a haunting on their hands. It is the same thing being played over and over on a loop, and they hypothesize the stones that make up the structure of the house are to blame. They attempt to scientifically analyze and manipulate the phenomenon, believing it to be some kind of natural playback system. Many films following The Stone Tape would also incorporate the idea that building materials and other objects recording traumatic historic events created a residual haunting. And perhaps that original BBC production and Hollywood's ensuing cinematic contributions are why the Stone Tape theory went gangbusters with the public moving forward. Or perhaps it is just all thanks to that original BBC production finally giving it a badass name. The Stone Tape theory is still, today, one of the most popular, widely held beliefs in the paranormal field when discussing residual hauntings. But should it be? The idea of places or materials absorbing and replaying energy is fascinating, but does it hold up under scrutiny? Could certain materials actually retain emotional or energetic imprints? Is there any real-world science to back this up? Or does the concept just sound cool and legit to the uninformed and so it stuck? Most of the YouTube explorations that I have watched on this topic will tell you straight out no, and will clearly explain why no. But you know what? I'll be devil's advocate. I'll bite. So, a brief recap. Charles Babbage theorized that the words and sounds we make are recorded by the atmosphere and physical actions are recorded by the material world around us, even long after we no longer hear the sound and long after we feel the vibration of the foot on the ground or see the ripple in the water. These things can be traced. A speculated powerful enough entity could accurately estimate its path into the future and see its originating event in the past. The air, water, and earth around us acts as a library of recorded events via the trace movements in the particles. Joseph Rhodes Buchanan championed the interesting concept that perhaps gifted individuals could essentially act as this entity with the power of psychometry. Certain people could detect information, past events connected to an object, simply by a laying of hands upon it. Henry H. Price expanded upon this concept, giving these memories a home in the psychic ether, a space and substance located somewhere between the physical and the mental that allowed the memories to imprint on physical objects and be detected by gifted individuals with the ability to perceive them. And T.C. Lethbridge funneled these ideas through a scientific lens, hypothesizing that memories and thoughts were being imprinted at certain locations around certain natural features, such as running water, broadcast from one person to a receiver, much like a television set receiving a signal and presenting a picture, thanks to the power of resonant energy. I think all of these guys got at least pieces of this right. They just didn't have our modern understandings of science. We can now look to experimentation that clearly shows human energy, action, emotion, and intention affects the physical in unexpected and unexplainable ways. In the 1990s, Dr. Masaru Emoto published several volumes of work titled Messages from Water, where he shared his findings with picture evidence from a tested hypothesis that water reacted to human intention, namely positive and negative thoughts and words. Based on his observations, Dr. Emoto called water a blueprint for our reality, and that its very physical structure could be altered by emotional energies and vibrations. The experiment went thus. Water was collected in containers. Individual containers of water were then subjected to either loving words and thoughts, peaceful and happy music, pretty pictures, or horrible and angry thoughts, music, and pictures. Next, droplets were collected, frozen, and had their picture taken. The end result, the loved water produced beautiful, symmetrical, intricate, aesthetically pleasing crystals, and the negatively treated water produced horrible, misshapen, non-symmetrical, definitely not aesthetically pleasing crystals. Dr. Emoto would wind up conducting his water crystal experiments hundreds of times in order to test the effects of different words, thoughts, and music on the crystal formation. Dr. Emoto's work was criticized by the scientific community for lack of rigorous methodology, inadequate controls, and purportedly a difficulty in replicating his results in independent studies. So I just want to draw your attention to the paper he published on yet another replication of his experiment in collaboration with Dean Radden, Nancy Lund, and Takashige Kitsu in 2008. Now, reading the criticisms of his research versus reading this study and all that it entails has me a little confused. Criticism, including a lack of rigorous methodology and inadequate controls. So here it is. The hypothesis tested was water exposed to distant intentions affects the aesthetic rating of ice crystals formed. Over 3 days, 1,900 people in Austria and Germany focused their intentions towards water samples located inside an electromagnetically shielded room in California. Water samples located near the target water but unknown to the people providing intentions acted as proximal controls. Other samples located outside the shielded room acted as distant controls. Ice drops formed from samples of water in the different treatment zones were photographed by a technician. Each image was assessed for aesthetic beauty by over 2,500 independent judges and the resulting data were analyzed, all by individuals blind with respect to the underlying treatment conditions. Results suggested that crystal images in the intentionally treated condition were rated as aesthetically more beautiful than proximal control crystals. This outcome replicated results previously documented. The people involved in the study were kept in the dark as to which bottles labeled A through F were being kept in which treatment condition, direct target, proximal, or distant. Almost 2,000 people in Austria and Germany, blind to all bottles but their two direct targets, were instructed to focus their energy and intention on these bottles, disregarding the rest. And 2,500 other people, blind to all the bottles, were asked to rate the aesthetic beauty of a bunch of pictures. Triple blind study. I read the entire thing. It seemed pretty damn rigorous and thorough to me. Plenty of controls. I'm kind of unsure what a scientist might suggest to add to the setup to make it even more credible. I would be curious to hear that. So, if we take this experiment at face value, human thoughts, emotions, and energy, and intentions can affect the physical. But so what, right? It's not like the physical can record these events. It's not like water can remember what you said. In 1988, Jacques Benveniste published a rather anger-inducing article in the scientific journal Nature. This article laid out research and findings from recent experiments concerning the structure and memory of water. Met with much skepticism, his experiments suggested that water could store and transmit biological information in ways that defied conventional chemistry. His research proposed that water has the ability to retain the energetic signature of substances it has come into contact with, even after those substances are physically removed. As there is no physical basis to explain how this could be, Nature's community of materialistic science readers called for the guillotine for this guy. Not really, but they were none too pleased, you know? They got a dogma to uphold, after all. Some of these experiments and findings had even been reproduced by outside laboratories, with members of those labs co-signing on this article. Multiple scientists, multiple labs, same results, not good enough. The uproar was enough to have the experiments properly redone under the unbiased, professional, and scientific eyes of a fraud detector, a journalist, and a magician. You know, not because they were 100% going in to definitely prove how it was being faked, but for just, like, good science, man. So, water has the capacity to remember, to record what once was. Now, maybe water is the only physical material that has this capacity. Maybe, as Lethbridge suspected, water is especially a driving force in strange phenomena. But aside from the belief in the paranormal field that bodies of water can contribute to hauntings, what about other physical materials? What about this theory's namesake? This Emoto and Benveniste research, it doesn't say anything about other materials. But the following does. Interrogation specialist for the CIA and founder of their polygraph unit, Cleve Baxter, in the 1960s, claimed that plants react to human emotion and intention. Using a polygraph instrument attached to a leaf, he reported a change in electrical resistance in the plant whenever it was harmed or threatened with harm. The readings on the polygraph indicated stress response by the plant. In the early 1900s, Jagadish Chandra Bose discovered that plants responded positively to certain kinds of music, causing them to grow faster and bigger. Physical stimuli resulted in response by the plants, indicating a sense of feeling. He would hypothesize, based on his observations, that plants can feel pain and understand affection. And in 2014, Dr. Monica Gagliano and her team experimented on a plant most commonly known as the touch-me-not, which curls its leaves in response to physical stimulation. The researchers dropped test specimens from a height of only 6 inches just to elicit the flinching response, not to harm them. After repeating this action multiple times, the researchers noticed that the plants no longer recoiled, demonstrating memory in these plants that were remembering the previous falls were not harmful and so began to ignore them. So, a plant that has no brain, no consciousness, can demonstrate impact from human words and intentions and emotion from music, but it can also demonstrate memory? It can take in information and retain it? Interesting. It has been argued that plants do in fact have a sentience, which makes it a little less weird to believe they have the ability to be impacted in these ways. What about materials that are not alive at all? Dr. Emoto also did experiments with rice, also received skeptically by the scientific community. But here's the fun part about this one. You can run this experiment for yourself and see the impact our words and emotions have on the inanimate world around us. You're going to cook up some rice, cool it down, and divvy it up evenly into 3 jars. Put some masking tape on the jars and label each with the following phrases: I love you, I hate you, and ignore. You're going to put these jars in a safe place in your home that doesn't get too hot or cold, not in direct sunlight, and every day, twice a day for a month, you are going to spend 30 seconds each talking to your jars. To the love jar, you are going to focus all of your loving energy, kind words, and words of affirmation on this jar. You are going to tell that jar it is the most beautiful jar of rice you have ever seen, and the world is better for having it in it. To the hate jar, you're going to be a raging Karen, and it is going to be your severely underpaid waiter. And it is Sunday brunch. Unleash the nasty. And the ignore jar is going to take care of itself. Don't look at it. Don't talk to it. Intentionally ignore it. The results at the end of your 30-day experiment can vary. There can be variables you could not have accounted for. But if all goes according to your plan, all goes the way this experiment has gone for countless people who have already done it, the love jar should be fairly white, clear, just a lump of wet rice. Congrats. The hate jar should be pretty nasty looking. Mold and dark spots, murky, browning. Surprisingly, in a lot of these experiments that I've seen, the jar that is ignored has at times come out looking even worse than the hate jar. Just a jar of rot. Maybe something to be said for human disregard and discard being the cruelest intention of all. Similar private citizen experiments have also been done with lemons and bread, receiving similar results. Okay, follow me on this. Plants and water have demonstrated memory, recording capacity, if you will. Everything that I have talked about has demonstrated physical impact from human intention and energy. But what about things like stone? Why would certain stones and natural materials like wood be prime candidates for the stone tape theory? How in the world am I going to wildly speculate my way through this one? Well, this was a surprise even to me, but I think Lethbridge may have been right in one very important aspect of his theories. I suspect if there is anything to Stone Tape theory, its place in residual hauntings, period. Perhaps it has more to do with water than we think. What if this capacity doesn't rely solely on water directly? Would something water-associated, in theory, have the same capacity? Water-associated like limestone, a stone often linked to paranormal activity, or sandstone, slate, basalt, granite, quartz. Water plays a significant role in the formation and composition of many of the stones associated with Stone Tape theory. And the non-living materials I just mentioned just a second ago are water-associated as well. You cook rice in water. Plants have a high water content. Bread recipes require water. And if you are about to argue, no, Kristen, they require milk, I will argue back. What do you think makes up 90% of milk, yo? Water. That's right. Lemons as well. So, if water has demonstrated capacity for interaction with and retention of human emotions, energy, and intention, as we have seen in Emoto's and Benveniste's work, it's a reasonable speculation that materials that contain water or were formed by water may have similar capacities. Now, even if I can believe that to be a possibility, let's say we all allow for the interaction and retention portion of this wildly pseudoscientific claim, we do still have a problem. How does limestone, quartz, lemons, what have you, play back this information? It's going to get windy, but here is one way I think this could work. First, let me add some information that I already know about residual haunting reports. Residual is not intelligent. It is a piece of information that repeats the same way every time, like a song on the radio. Something else. There are many accounts of residual events being witnessed in a group, but only by some who were present. Some said they could see the soldiers marching along at Gettysburg, while others present reported only an empty field. This says to me there is selective perception taking place. Refining Lethbridge's comparison of people seeing these images to television receivers, I will compare folks more so to the different channels of a television or radio. Perhaps certain people more naturally tune in to the correct station to hear the song, aka see the residual event, at that moment. Ta-da! PGP's, STT's, water hypothesis. It was a long and winding road, I know, but we got here. Just one of many possible theories to explain how Stone Tape theory could work. There's a ton of them, okay? And you know what? From everything that I have read on the subject, it's not been proposed before. New theory to add to the pile, perhaps. Someone sign me up for a book deal. I am available for lectures. I am going to wrap up today's show with a plea to the scientific community, and I am going to read that for you now. Dogma is the curse of learning, and very often is the ruin of religion also. When you hear someone say, such and such a thing must be right because so and so says it is, you can be pretty safe in thinking that there is considerable doubt about the matter. We, all of us, really know very little indeed. Scientific thought is in the melting pot, and nobody can really forecast what will come out of the brew. But anything which can stimulate others to think things out for themselves must be of some value. There is a Gaelic proverb which says, two heads are better than one. even if they are sheep's heads. The more heads that can be got to take an interest in this subject, the larger is the chance that something important will be discovered. T.C. Lethbridge. Time and time again, spanning the many topics I have covered, scientific dogma has really proven itself to be a barrier to progress, to innovation, which is kind of funny. The greatest vehicle for innovation is also its greatest stop sign. Save for but a few strange individuals throughout history who dared step outside the confines of their dogma, dared to risk reputation, career, and even their life to challenge established beliefs and bring forth new ideas. Ideas that are now fundamental and taken for granted. Strange individuals like Galileo and Copernicus. Bruno, burned at the stake for suggesting the universe was infinite and contained multiple worlds. Darwin, Ignaz Semmelweis, who discovered the benefits of hand washing by medical professionals, an idea rejected by the medical community, an idea that lost him his job. These people were not wrong, far from it. Scientific dogma could have kept them from following new evidence and just saying the weird thing. But thankfully it didn't. So, scientists, be brave. Follow the evidence, even if it's pointing to what you previously thought was impossible. As George Bernard Shaw put it, progress is impossible without change, and those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. It is so nice to be back. The show took a break that was much longer than anticipated, but I'm back. I'm back, baby. During my break, I did a lot of thinking about the show and about some changes that have been on the back burner for far too long. These are going to be implemented. One of the biggest changes, which might be most apparent, is the scale of the show. We are scaling back for just a little bit on the audio platforms. So, for my audio listeners, there will now be only two shows a month, both of the deep dive solo format. I am going PGP Classic for a little bit. Hopefully, this is not so much a loss to regular weekly programming, but rather a gain in more thorough and thoughtful content. Now, if you are a fan of my guest content, never fear, it isn't going away, but it too is being adjusted. In the interest of providing my audience regularly with a more personal, authentic experience, and also implementing a long-time personal dream to get the show on a regular live schedule, guest episodes will now be live streamed. Woo! Expect a new guest once a month, only available on the Paranorm Girls Twitch and YouTube channels. I recently welcomed guest Kenneth Mogan, who is the author of a brand new paranormal romance called My Dead Boyfriend. We just did that last week. Discussed his book, his paranormal experiences. Oh, a lot more than I was expecting. Oh my gosh. We touched on spectrophilia. It was fun. It was so fun, you guys. And it rocked so hard being able to interact with viewers in real time. I hope you guys will consider joining me on the next. I will be announcing that guest and the date on our next episode. But you can make it easy on yourself and just go sub to the Paranorm Girl Twitch or YouTube channels and click the notifications button. YouTube and Twitch are where guest episodes will live for the time being. If you would like an additional or alternate opportunity to come hang out with me and discuss UFOs, I am a member of UAPDiscovery.org's discussion group. They hold monthly meetings online to discuss various UAP info and news, answer questions, dig into different cases and phenomena. We just held this month's meeting on March 15th. It was Saturday. It was awesome. And guess what? Everyone's welcome. Everyone's invited. This group is open to forum members on the site. So just visit uapdiscovery.org, sign up. It is free to do so. If you have any questions or issues with that sign-up process, just give me a holler, paranormgirlpod@gmail.com. Other than that, I dug especially deep with my remaining few brain cells on this one. So if you enjoyed today's show, please let me know by leaving a rating wherever you heard or saw it. You can also show support by becoming a member on Patreon or leaving comments under any of my videos, even just to say, hi, Kristen, and following and interacting with yours truly on social. Find me on every platform at Paranorm Girl Pod. That will wrap today's episode. I hope you guys have a fabulous rest of your day. Until next time, stay safe, keep the nightlight on, and sleep with one eye open.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.